Welcome to Slovenology, the podcast with Noah Charney.
Hello and welcome to the next episode of Slovenology, the podcast with Noah Charney. My guest today is someone who predates me as an American expat known in the media and living in Slovenia, Michael Manski. Thanks so much for coming to hang out.
Thank you for having me, Noah.
You have the loveliest voice, but you didn't train in radio. How did you study and how did you shift to the radio side of things?
Well, I went to school at NYU and studied journalism, and you had to pick either print, online, or television. I don't even think radio was an option, but I decided for print. And we would have classes in the morning, and in the morning, I really have like a really, it's a great voice. Like right when I wake up is the perfect time. It's this really strong, deep bass. And like I would talk and the table, you could feel the table vibrate in the classroom. And everyone was like, wow, you should be in radio.
And, you're like Barry White in the
like
morning.
Like Barry White in the morning. But then it gets, now it's like this. So, but in the morning, like I have about, there's like a 10 minute window where it's just like perfect.
Was it hard for you to shift from doing things, thinking and then writing and then doing them live and having that presentery mentality?
It's a different thing altogether. I do think that, and I realized it when I appear in front of a TV camera or something like that, how poor I am in appearing in front of a camera, because the skills you need for radio, like right now I'm not looking in your eyes and stuff because I'm so used to when there's a microphone that my eyes are kind of moving around and I'm thinking and I'm moving my hands and stuff, and I've gotten into a bad habit of, you know, no one can see me, so I can tap my feet and, you know, do whatever I want. And it's automatic now after all these years. So but I found that was a real problem in front of the TV camera, and it's you just focus on your voice, I guess.
Yeah. Well, that makes perfect sense, yeah.
Yeah.
The television presenting or speaking to camera is its own specialization.
It
For
is.
For a couple of years, I taught a workshop on public speaking and included presenting at Fido Fox.
Yeah.
And you have to practice by basically making like a target, like a bullseye for a dartboard,
right,
and staring at it, and your eyes don't move off it,
right,
while you're thinking about what you're going to say. And it's not for everyone, and
it's
very hard to do.
It's not for me.
That's fair enough. I mean, each person has their specialties, right?
Yeah.
I'm curious, what are some of the differences in radio media between Slovenia and the U.S.?
In terms of, I think radio is changing really, really rapidly in the United States, and that Slovenia is still, I guess, a bit behind. Partly because the public broadcaster, RTV, is, it's arguable, but the biggest show in town, and they're not hampered by commercial considerations,
mm-hmm,
the way the commercial radios are.
Okay.
So they're allowed to do things without having to worry too much about, well, we didn't get enough listeners.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
In this time slot, in,
yeah,
this 15 minutes, you know, whereas in the U.S. it's reached a point now where I think everything has been streamlined so extremely that, you know, I think local radio stations are dying out. You just have these conglomerates like Clear Channel and everything doing everything, and it's one guy in a studio in Florida,
yeah,
just doing like, hey Oklahoma, good morning,
yeah,
and then hey Tennessee, how's it going, and like just records it and they send it out, and it's just mass produced and stuff,
yeah,
like that. Whereas here, local radio, first of all, local radio is very strong still here. In Maribor, where I live, Radio City continues to be the most listened to radio station, and it's hard to imagine even them losing their top spot in the city, just because it's a part of the city, and because Slovenes also have their own dialects, as you know, and that it's a very important part of identity, and that, you know, then you have every village wants to hear their own dialect on the radio. So that also leads to a very fragmented radio market in Slovenia too.
Mm-hmm. What about in terms of the logistics and mechanics of making a radio show? Is it very similar in terms of the objects used, the technology, as it would be in the US, or is it a different approach here technologically?
I think that very slowly here in Slovenia also it's changing, in the sense that it used to be and it still is in at RTV, it's not one man radio, but that seems to be the future. Okay. That seems to be where we're going.
What does that look like, one man radio?
One man radio means one person sitting in the studio in front of a mixing table with a microphone and doing everything.
So he's the DJ, he's the presenter. DJ,
he's the presenter.
Pressing the buttons when the music starts.
Yes, all of that.
That's like those, hurdy-gurdy men.
Like the orchestra. That's exactly what it is.
Like a little monkey.
That's exactly what it is. And in the past, you know, people would go out. There would be someone who would have the recording equipment. There would be someone who would be the journalist. There would maybe even be a producer coming along, you know. And now it's one person comes, and you know, oftentimes it'll be very low tech. It'll be someone, you know, with an iPhone and just a microphone. Mm-hmm. Just plug it in and do an interview and go back and you know, edit it and put it on air.
See, that's interesting to me, because this is the same RTV, like the TV station, and we filmed a TV program there. I had the experience that was very different from when I filmed something in the UK, which usually has a very streamlined team. Mm-hmm. We had like 20 people just hanging out, and there were two guys holding one light, and you had a cheek pause for a cigarette every 15 minutes. I would become a chain smoker if I was doing TV regularly here. And it seemed like they had all these people on staff. Maybe it was just that period, they didn't have enough projects, so it was overstaffed. But in the radio world, it's the opposite.
It's changing now. It's changing. There's still, I think there still will be streamlining done, especially at RTV. Mm-hmm. I'm not in management there, but the trend seems to be very much moving towards less and less people, or people doing more and more things themselves.
Okay.
So
let's take us back. This is the question you answer probably in every interview you do. I do the same. But what first brought you to Slovenia?
Of course, and I have the same answer that almost everyone does, and that's the girlfriend.
Yeah, yeah. So
I moved over. We were living apart at the time. She was in Maribor and I was in New York at the time. And I just kind of thought, why not try?
Yeah.
Living in Slovenia, I'd been really surprised when I visited it the first time, just because I had imagined, like I think a lot of Americans imagine, just factories and like just coal mines everywhere and just like gray skies and very, very communist, I guess, was the image I had in my head. And not even communist, Stalinist. And so when I came, I was very shocked at like, wow, this place is really beautiful. And also the name, right? I've heard a lot of people ask if slovenly comes from Slovenia, right? Which is also like... But that's like also...
I've never heard that. That's really good.
And I kind of felt at home here really quickly.
Huh, okay.
I was kind of surprised. There was culture shock in the beginning in terms of the pace of things, like you said, with the cheek pause and the, you know, taking it easy and everything like that, which I was not used to at all. And that took a while to get used to, but it's really grown on me, and I've really come to feel at home.
When you first moved, what were some of the things that you particularly liked, if we sort of zoom in on microscopic things?
Yes.
And what were some of the things that you needed to adjust to?
I didn't like it at first, but the idea of the cheek pause, that the you know, the cigarette break and having a coffee, sitting in a cafe and talking with people. I didn't drink coffee when I came there, so I would just sit there like an idiot, and like everyone would have coffee and a cigarette. I didn't smoke either. So I was like, I'll have water and like drink a glass of water for an hour. But I find that I quite like that now.
Okay.
I think that if anything, the times we're living in, where people are getting, we're more and more isolated, I guess. Right, you know, you've seen those studies of how people have, you know, less and less friends, and they're spending less and less time with each other. They're not, they don't feel connected with their community. So I see that as an antidote to that, this kind of path towards loneliness that we're moving towards, of isolation, and everyone is just in their own, you know. I imagine in the future it's going to be their own virtual reality set in there. You know, they don't talk to anyone. Which I think will be its own problem, but I do think that's important. I do think that socializing and connecting with people is important and should be treated as something important.
Sure.
Right.
That is a big difference in the U.S. coffee culture. Is you usually get takeout,
right?
Or you sit in there with your headphones on, staring at your computer.
Exactly.
So that it's the idea that you. Go to coffee and you take time off from work. I like that too. That's
yes,
very nice. Yeah,
it is.
But how did you start drinking coffee then?
Then I had to. Then I was like, okay, well, I'm going to have to do something. So I remember I used to, I would just order a coffee and then I would put like 3 or 4 sugars in it just so I could drink it.
But I was used to that too. I used to like the Dunkin' Donuts medium sweet, medium light. And medium sweet is like only 6 sugars instead of 12. And so that's how I started drinking coffee.
Yeah. You got to slowly, like.
So that took a little adjusting to. What was something that made you feel kind of like this could be home for me early on?
I want to say the people. This will sound a bit weird, but like I've been here, I don't know how many years, 15 years, but, and I can think of like 1 or 2 people that I dislike.
Okay, that's good.
Right.
But you're gonna get those 1 or 2 people in the end.
Of course. Of course. There's like 1 or 2 people that I think like, oh, I wish this person wasn't in my life.
Okay, fair enough.
But generally I seem to get along really well with people, and I think Slovenian society isn't as fragmented as it is in the U.S. in terms of income and in terms of classes.
Yeah.
So you have schools where it's everyone's kind of mixed in from all walks of life, and neighborhoods are the same, which I found very jarring when I came here first, where you see like this beautiful house and then right next to it is like an old farm and like just falling apart and like a tractor outside, you know, and it's just like all jumbled up. Whereas in the U.S. it's very much, you know, this suburb is there's wealthy people here and there's, you know, and it's kind of fragmented. And I, at first I found it very jarring, but I found that I enjoy it a lot, in the sense that I have a neighbor who is one of them, a factory worker, you know, and he invites me over. He's an older guy, he's in his 80s, and he invites me over and we sit and we'll have coffee, maybe something else with it, and we'll talk, and I just think like, you know, this is kind of cool.
Yeah, that's great.
This is kind of cool that, you know, we're very unsimilar, you know. We're very unsimilar. There's a huge age gap. There's a culture gap. There's, you know, everything. But there's something about Slovenia that allows everyone to just kind of mix together, and everyone just hangs out. Everyone has a drink together. Everyone, you know, fights with their neighbors.
Yeah.
That's another story. But yeah,
that's great.
Yeah,
Tell me about Maribor. I'm embarrassed to say I hardly know it.
What to say about Maribor? It has changed a lot since I moved there. It's a very different place, but like the rest of the country as well, right? You can see, you can surely too, the effect of wealth and what wealth has done to the country.
That, yeah, sure.
The buildings are more beautiful. There's more shopping centers everywhere. There are bigger cars and all those effects. Maribor is interesting. It had this traumatic experience of being this industrial powerhouse in Yugoslavia to just imploding after independence and just losing these huge factories, and which I find interesting. I kind of like that. I like it has like battle scars,
okay.
Right? It has like old war wounds. I feel like the people are a bit tough, rough around the edges, like proudly so.
Yeah.
I think they would say themselves that that they're more tough and I don't get into the whole like rivalry with Maribor Ljubljana. I find that silly and like it's like a waste of time. But it's an interesting place. I'm kind of curious what its future will look like, because
mm-hmm.
I feel like it still doesn't know where it's going. It had to reinvent itself from being an industrial town or something, but I feel like it's still trying to figure out what it wants to be, kind of. And I find that interesting.
Do you live in the center or just outside the city?
Outside.
Okay.
Outside, I did.
What are three things in the city that you like particularly, maybe a cafe or a place to sit or visit?
Okay. What are the three things that I like in Maribor?
Or two, if it's so hard to come.
Yeah. I gotta think. Let me think carefully, because I know I'm going to say something and be like, oh man, why didn't I say something else?
Or if it's easier to say three things just outside of Maribor.
Let me think.
It's already intriguing that you're having to think about it. Is this maybe because it doesn't have the sort of maybe more superficial touchstone automatic answers that some cities do? That it's more about an atmosphere than a specific, you know, favorite restaurant or cafe or park?
Yeah. I think it's,
While you're thinking about it, what this makes me think of, just your reaction, but also my, I guess, lack of familiarity with the city, I found it really interesting to read the last book by the famous travel writer Jan Morris,
mm-hmm.
called Trieste and the Meaning of Nowhere. And it's a thin little book.
Yeah.
Of course, it's interesting for Slovenes because Trieste used to be the biggest city in Slovenian
yes.
territory,
yeah.
And one day when they're least expecting it, we'll take it back.
Right, yeah.
But the idea is that it's a city that's amazing and beautiful and has an interesting story, but it doesn't have a touchstone in the popular imagination for people who live outside of it. And it's something that came up in trying to help with Tourism Ljubljana campaigns,
mm-hmm.
that the general vibe of foreigners is that they think positively of Slovenian Ljubljana, and they've heard it's lovely, but they don't have a single image that helps fix it in their minds the way people have the Eiffel Tower for Paris or
right.
Sagrada Familia for Barcelona.
Yes.
And that is more difficult from a tourism standpoint, because you have to constantly remind people what the place is. It doesn't have a single icon that you can put in a photo and they're going to know. And we humans like to put sort of like mental thumbtacks into certain things that act as touchstones. And if there's something that you generally like but you can't quite put your finger on it, right, it tends to be more evasive.
Yeah.
Is that maybe the case?
That could be it. That could be it. I mean, I'm thinking of the usual places that are always mentioned for Maribor, and it's, you know, Lent and by the river and Poshna Ulica and these places, but they don't feel like Maribor to me. They that's kind of like the what I would recommend a tourist go check out. Yeah. I guess to see the world's oldest grapevine or whatever. it has no particular...
Yeah.
It doesn't resonate with me.
Sure, yeah.
In a special way. Yeah.
If you have some buddies who you want to meet up with and they say, let's meet in the center, where might you gather?
If they said in the center, I'd be like, yeah, well,
I say, you don't want
to
come to my house.
I'm not going to get a parking spot there.
Okay, so your social dynamic is more outside the center. That's totally legit, too.
Oh, yeah.
Wait, is there like a cool bustilla near your house that is the place to be?
You know what? I will give a shout out to a little burger place outside of Maribor called Bice.
Okay.
I hope it succeeds. I hope it does well. It's a little burger joint, but it's all local made.
Cool, okay.
Ingredients and stuff.
Great.
Like that. I have this weird thing where the things that I like and the stores that I like close. I feel like I'm
it's
cursed.
It's mostly your fault.
It's mostly my fault. Yeah. Yeah. I'm like the kiss of death when I like something. So I don't want to jinx it for them.
Well, I could eat burgers every day.
Yeah.
So I was excited with the gourmet burger wave that came about 20 years after it was in the U.S.
Yeah.
Last few years, and you can get solid burgers in lots of places now, which was delighted.
Absolutely.
So yeah, more power to it. That's cool. Okay. I'm curious about the pseudo documentary film slash real documentary film.
Yes.
Houston, We Have a Problem, which I saw and loved.
Okay.
And I saw it with grizzled Slovenes who were convinced that they remembered every aspect of it from newsreels.
Absolutely.
Can you tell us whatever you're allowed to tell us about it? But we don't want to ruin it for someone who hasn't seen it yet. You absolutely want to see this. This was made for HBO Europe.
Yes.
It's a feature-length documentary drama.
Yeah.
And I'll just say this. There are portions of it that are historically true, but some portions of it that appear to be historically true but aren't. And part of the game is to try to figure out which is which. I think that's safe without messing it up for anybody. But what can you tell me about the process of it?
What can I tell you about the process without spoiling it? It was...
Or you know what we can do.
Yeah.
If you have not seen Houston, We Have a Problem, this is the easiest part.
Yeah.
Stop this podcast right now, or pause it, save it for later.
Yeah.
And go watch it. And then we're going to resume and we're going to talk about it because it's so worth talking about. But at the same time, if you haven't seen it, it's much more fun if you see it with a fresh mind.
Yes.
So 3, 2, 1, and we're back with Michael Manzky. So tell me about this totally fascinating, partially fake documentary that's so compelling.
Well, it started off as just a trailer that was done by the people behind it. It's a family, the Wirtz family that worked together, Žiga Wirtz as a director, Boštjan, producer, and Andrej, the cameraman, from Novo Mesto. And I think it just started as as a lark, as a, wouldn't it be funny if Yugoslavia had a space program, something like that? I think it wasn't a big idea. It was just like, wouldn't it be funny to do a fake trailer? And they did it, and it resonated so deeply with people, and it just had views, it just all over Yugoslavia, and comments saying that, you know, it would appear, started appearing in media, the trailer, that they're working on a movie, and they weren't at all. And like you said, the reaction was, yeah, I knew that. Whereas they really had just, they hadn't based it on anything. They just kind of, they dreamt it up and put that idea out there. And the fact that it resonated with so many people is fascinating. The fact that, like you said, so many people saw the movie and said, yeah, I remember all of that, is equally fascinating. I think they realized once they put the trailer out that they had tapped into something, you know, and they tapped into some very strong feelings, and then said, okay, we got to do something about this now. We got to actually make the movie. And so they did.
And how did they bring you into the picture?
They originally asked me because they wanted to do kind of like some test shots and send some material for financing purposes,
sure,
to
yeah.
see if they could drum up
yeah.
funding. And so they asked me. We knew each other, and they said, "Can you just sit in
okay.
and pretend to be a historian
yeah.
and talk about it or something
yeah.
like that?" And I said, "Fine. I'm not interested in being in the movie, but I'll do that." And I did that, and they shopped it around, and they got funding for the movie. And one of the things apparently that people told them was like, oh, "Wow, is that guy really a historian?"
And they said, "He is now."
He is now, yeah. Well, fun fact: I actually did study history as an undergrad, so I wasn't that far off from like the nerdy historian. That I portrayed in the movie, but the interesting thing also is that then when you said that people reacted by saying yeah I remember that or yeah that happened, it blew my mind when people who knew me came to me and asked me was that all true, and I was thinking like, well, my name isn't Roger. I'm not a historian of the Yugoslav space program. Like, you know me.
Yeah.
We've known each other for years.
Yeah.
But it was something about it that seemed very authentic.
Yeah.
So much so that I don't know, they I don't know.
Well, it was incredibly well done. It was incredibly well received. And for me, I knew your name and your voice, but I had never seen what you looked like. So I thought your voice sounded familiar. And that's actually how I got suspicious.
Uh-huh, okay.
And it was afterwards, looking back, and there were a couple of touchstones that I suggest that sounds suspicious.
Yes.
But what's clever was they integrated some real historical news footage.
Yes.
With faked historical news footage and with a sort of travelogue faux documentary about you bringing someone who had been part of the space program
right.
to real sites.
Right.
And I also knew that Yugoslavia had very briefly tried to have a space program, but it didn't get anywhere.
Yeah.
But that seed was enough to say, well, I know only two sentences about it, so what else
yeah.
is there? And so then it was compelling to build on. If they had never had anything at all, it would have been much less compelling.
Yes.
But the idea that they had this, who knows how far it got, if anywhere, and that's all we know, then that building on that was wonderful.
Yes.
I remember thinking a couple of the real pieces of news footage, if you read what was on the signs of some protesters, I remember at one point, that it didn't match what we had to talk about, but you have to really study it.
Yeah.
But that's already a good sign if
yes.
the film encourages a viewer to watch it a second time voluntarily,
yes. yeah.
And to actually think deeply about it and study
yes.
it, that's the sign of a successful
right.
film. So I was loving it.
Yeah.
And also, especially with an interest in forgeries and fakes,
yes.
I thought it was just totally
right.
ingenious. But it's you know, I think Yugoslavs wanted to have this sense of pride and a sense that they've influenced world events, and of course they did to a certain extent, but their tendrils were longer than elsewhere.
Yes.
It was totally cool. But you also acted very well. And that was impressive. What was that acting experience like for someone who didn't think that they would be an actor?
I didn't want to do it at all, and I told them no, and then I'm not interested, and then I don't feel good in front of the camera. I don't know how to do anything. And they looked around for a bit, and then they just said, no, you work. For some reason, you're convincing as a nerdy historian. Yeah, so quite the compliment. And so we did it. I just decided, okay, I'll give it a shot. If they're happy with it, then fine.
And did it take you a little while to feel like you're getting into the groove, or did it come quite naturally at that point?
Oh, I did. I can tell you the first scene we shot, I was very nervous, and the scene was where I meet the scientist who had been working on the space program, and I go up and shake his hand. I don't think it appears in the movie even. And the first thing I do is I go out, and they're like, okay, you're going to go out and just say hello to him and shake his hand and, you know, have a drink, whatever, with him, sit down. And so I go out and I shake his hand and I call him by his real name. And they're just like, cut. And that was my first experience with acting. And I was just like, oh man, like what a way to start. So, but they were very patient with me, and it got easier as time went on.
That's great. Well, it was really so well done. I was totally delighted with it.
Yeah.
I think for maybe just my last question for you. I loved Kako Postaneš Slovenec, How Do You Become a Slovene, your podcast series. This was from many years ago now.
Yes.
But I found it actively funny. Like, people say they laugh out loud at things, and that's usually an exaggeration. I actually laughed out loud at things.
Great.
How did that come about? And maybe people can still download it, right?
They can. It's on YouTube and on the RTV website. Still, it came about. The idea first was the editor of the radio said, "What if we do a show helping people learn Slovene?"
Mm-hmm.
So that we would do, like, you know, little weekly lessons with Dobar dan and means this and this and that. And I thought, like, yeah, maybe that would be interesting. I think it would be more helpful to a foreigner to kind of teach them about some of the cultural things, to teach them about what to kind of expect living here or when dealing with Slovenes. That would be more helpful than how to say Dobar dan, which you can, it's in Lonely Planet.
Yeah.
It's right there. So it started as that, and then it just kind of took on a life of its own, and just went all over the place, and was just kind of a fun creative outlet for me as well, to kind of, you know, think about what it means to live here, what are the challenges, what would I tell a foreigner about what life is really like here. But to do it in a funny way, to do it in a way by exaggerating and things like that. Yeah.
Michael, thank you so much for your time. This has been great fun. Where can people tune into more of your activities, your radio shows and whatnot?
The radio, you can listen to Radio SI. It's online at www.radiosi.eu. And the shows are on YouTube. The movies on Netflix, maybe?
Could be HBO. You can find it. Houston, we have a problem. Michael, thanks so much.
Thank
and
you, Noam.
Next time we'll go for a burger in Madrid.
Absolutely. Great.